Next month will mark 4 years that the United States has been in Iraq. We have lost over 3,100 soldiers during the war. There are 10 times that many who have been wounded, which says a lot about how much better our military medical units are at saving lives. But once those soldiers get home, there is still a lot more work to do, both physically and psychologically. If, like me, you have read the pieces that Dana Priest and Ann Hull have written in the last few days in the Washington Post about how our men and women who have come home have been treated in Walter Reed Army Medical Hospital in Washington, D.C., you would understand how many, many times I've talked on this show about how support the troops seems only to be part of our foreign policy and not as much of our domestic policy. That when our troops do come home, bloodied and battered, they do get stitched back together by some of the best medics in the world. But after that, there is an enormous amount of rehab and physical therapy and a lot of mental health issues that still need to be dealt with, that aren't dealt with. And this is where the system, our support the troops system, is failing those troops so miserably. These stories in the Washington Post have been stories of soldiers who are stuck in red tape hell, bureaucracy like no other. They are shoved off through facilities where neglect has replaced care, where heroism has been replaced by resentment. And as you read these stories, if you're anything like me, you just keep getting madder and madder and madder, because these are the volunteers, these men and women, who we have asked to put on the uniform, and they have, to go and fight ostensibly for us. The good news is that these stories of the last couple of days in the Washington Post have brought an outpouring of anger and concern. The military now seems to be responding and trying to make things better. The story in today's paper by Priest and Hull, a follow-up to what they've written, talks about how somebody's red light finally went on and they saw how bad conditions were in places like Building 18 on the Walter Reed campus in Washington, D.C. But the question is, how did it get this bad in the first place? I can't help but wondering whether Jim Nicholson, who's the Secretary of Veteran Affairs, will stand up and be counted among the chorus of people who want answers as to how it got this bad for our returning veterans. I wonder when Congress is going to ask for an explanation of how these circumstances evolved and how many similar circumstances exist, why our injured soldiers are being treated this way and their wounds are being further exacerbated here at home. I wonder if anybody's going to point out that many of these soldiers don't technically qualify as veterans yet because they are still considered to be on active duty. Walter Reed is not a VA hospital. Technically, it's part of the Department of Defense, which means that these rotting and rotten conditions got that way under the regime of Donald Rumsfeld as Secretary of Defense. He's the guy who said, you go to war with the army you have. He should have added, and then you ignore them when they come home. And I'd also like to know, where are the politicians who love attacking the news media so much? When are they going to step forward and thank Dana Priest and Ann Hull and the others of the Washington Post who are telling this story for uncovering it and forcing these changes to be made? Earlier today, Charlie Brennan talked with Congressman John Shimkus from Illinois about this. And I want to play you three cuts from that interview with Congressman Shimkus earlier today.
I have given tours to the Capitol to Walter Reed veterans for the past 2 years, over 300 soldier members. This is the first I've heard of it.
The first he's heard of it. But this has been going on now for a couple of years. Why there has been that disconnect between that reality and Capitol Hill, I can't explain. Here's another comment from Congressman Shimkus this morning.
It gets very frustrating for a member of Congress. If we would have known about this a year ago, it's something that all we have to do is show up and point it out, and it would get fixed.
That is not necessarily true, as we saw during Katrina, for instance. Congress knowing about something doesn't automatically mean it's going to be fixed. But this statement from Congressman Shimkus this morning made me even madder.
I'm aghast. I'm very frustrated. And also with the Washington Post, if they had known about this 4 months ago, They ought to told somebody 4 months ago.
Why is he shooting the messenger there? Yeah. He should be praising the people at the Washington Post who broke this story.
All right, thank you for revealing to us a terrible problem.
And we are going to do everything we can. We're not going to be in denial about this. We're going to do everything we can to fix this situation. Now, I've invited Paul Rykoff back onto the show. He's almost become a regular over the last few months and, in fact, over the last several years. Paul served in Iraq as a first lieutenant, and when he came back, he founded IAVA, the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America, an organization that now numbers tens of thousands of our returning veterans. Paul, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and I also appreciate your fury and your frustration here. I'm glad you're bringing more attention to this because this is a critical story. And, you know, I have the networks on right now, and a lot of them are still focused on Britney Spears and Anna Nicole Smith. So I'm glad you're getting down to the real news and keeping folks in the loop here.
Well, that isn't news. This is news. And you have actually been on Capitol Hill, I know, lobbying for the veterans' legislative agenda. Has this come up in your talks on Capitol Hill?
No, it hasn't. But we've known about these stories for months. And Congressman Shipkus attacking the Washington Post, you know, saying why have they been sitting on this? Well, it takes months to pull together a comprehensive series of pieces like this and to get the data and to do the interviews. So, you know, I think he's really out of line attacking the Washington Post. And he hasn't heard about it. He hasn't seen it because when he goes to Walter Reed, just like when he goes to Iraq, he gets a dog and pony show. You know, you really don't get into the tough places, and you don't get to talk to everyone. And most of the people who spend time on Walter Reed have known about Building 18. The patients, the outpatients especially, know about Building 18. There's a mice infestation problem there. They have cockroaches. There's black mold and generally pretty pathetic living conditions. Anybody who's in an outpatient situation doesn't want to be in Building 18, and we know that.
And when any congressman says, if we knew about this, we would have done something about it, there has been absolutely no oversight of this in these nearly 4 years we've been in this war, right?
Yeah, that's a critical point here, and I think you were right to point the finger at Secretary Rumsfeld. And, you know, this is one of the first, I think, real challenges for Secretary Gates. Let's see what he's going to do here. You know, we're calling for investigations. We're calling for action from the DOD, the Department of Defense, and from the president because they need to do something about this immediately. I know that Walter Reed is going to open up their doors today and tomorrow to the press and show them what they're doing to change it, but they've also recognized that they did have a problem there and they needed to take action. And unfortunately, throughout this war, when it comes to veterans issues, it's taken these blockbuster press exposés to really get movement on the Hill. The same thing was true with body armor. The same thing was true with the inadequate number of troops. And unfortunately, the same thing is going to be true with our wounded folks and the VA.
But, you know, unlike some of those other issues you brought up there, this is a slam dunk, 435 to nothing in Congress, 100 to nothing in the Senate. Where, if you're going to be out there saying we're supporting the troops, this is where you have to stand up. Every politician at the federal level has to stand up and say, you know what, I'm not going home today till this is fixed.
And that's exactly right. But we've got to hold them accountable because they're not all doing that. I think, you know, another area to look at, and I think you were right to show that this is not a part of the VA. This is separate. But the new VA budget did come out in the last few weeks, and the president's proposing steep cuts in the VA for 2009 and 2010. They're proposing a freeze on prosthetics research in 2008. They're proposing new fees and co-pays. They want to charge veterans to use the VA system, and not just Iraq and Afghanistan vets, but other generations of vets as well. So this is going to come up for debate and eventually a vote, and everybody, and I hope Congressman Shimkus included, will vote the right way here and vote in favor of veterans and make sure that budget is appropriate and it's accurate.
Now, this is all part of the legislative agenda that you've been talking to them about on the Hill. What I know that this Building 18 and Walter Reed problem hasn't come up specifically, but what has been the reaction when you said, look, this is not enough money. This is abhorrent to charge our veterans, our returning veterans, fees for things that traditionally have been a free service as part of the thank you from America to our military men and women. What have they said to you on Capitol Hill?
Well, they've said they're going to stand with us for the most part. I think there are still some in Congress and the Senate who think that co-pays are okay, that think it's okay to double the cost right now for prescription medication for veterans from roughly $8 to roughly $15. And there's another issue here. It's balancing the budget. And the president's trying to balance his budget by 2012. And part of that is going to be on the backs of veterans. So they say they're going to stand with us, and they all like the photo op in front of, you know, a wall of folks wearing camouflage. But their votes are going to come up in the next few weeks. And we hope that folks will, you know, check our website, IAVA.org, and others, and watch how they actually vote. Because the proof is in the pudding. They can say they support the troops, but they've got to put their votes and their money where their mouth is.
You could blame Rumsfeld. Well, you should. But what about the other Defense Department hierarchy working at Walter Reed? Why weren't they screaming about this? Why would it take the Washington Post to do it? Where were those people?
That's exactly the question we're asking right now, and I hope that Secretary Gates moves quickly on this. Somebody needs to be held accountable. Somebody needs to be fired. There needs to be an investigation. We need to find out why it happened, who screwed up, and what we're going to do to make sure it doesn't happen again, because, you know, wounded folks are going to keep coming back. This war isn't ending anytime soon. We know that now. And with this new surge in Baghdad, we're going to have an influx of wounded vets. So we've got to not only deal with the problems at hand, but accurately project for future demand. And that's something that the Department of Defense and the VA have not been able to do throughout this war.
Paul, after the most recent round of BRAC hearings, Walter Reed Army Medical Center was actually one of those that was scheduled to be shut down. It is scheduled to be closed by 2011. Could part of this, and believe me, I don't buy into this, but I'm bringing it up as a devil's advocate argument, could part of this be them saying, look, A, we didn't anticipate the war going on this long, and so we didn't anticipate we'd need the facilities, and B, we have been ordered to have to shut this facility down, so we don't have the money to put in to fix up these facilities for these returning wounded soldiers?
I think that's an excuse, but it's definitely not an answer. And in the military, we used to say that an excuse has a maximum effective range of 0 meters. So that doesn't work too well for me. I mean, it's their job to anticipate. It's their job to move the resources and make sure they have what they need. And if they don't, it's their job to raise the red flag. So the general overseeing Walter Reed, no matter what his excuse is, he needs to bring this up with his higher command and make sure that he's got what he needs to make sure our folks are taken care of.
So even if the place was going to be closed, he could say, hey, you know what, you may be closing us in 3 or 4 years, but at the moment we've got a crisis here that needs to be dealt with, and we need to make this public so that people will fix it.
Exactly. At one point they had, I think, 4 claims people or paperwork pushers for about 700 veterans. That's inadequate. You know right away if your people are overstressed and overworked. And you got to remember, there are a lot of people at Walter Reed working very hard here, but they're overworked, they're under-resourced, and they can't take care of everybody without being properly provided with materials and staff and money that they need. So, you know, I don't know what the excuses are. I hope we have an investigation and find out. Let's have congressional hearings at the Armed Services Committee, and let's have some vets sitting there on C-SPAN talking about what they experienced, and have veterans and other groups stand up and behind them, and also have these senators and congressmen talk about what they're going to do. You're elected. We got a new Congress. You know, we're all thrilled about that. But let's see what they're going to do here.
How big is the role in your mind of the bureaucracy that DOD is? Because there were repair orders, we understand. So there was an effort to say on paper, this is broken, 54 different repair orders that went unfilled versus apathy versus inability to handle, as you mentioned, the influx of wounded soldiers.
You know, I think it's probably a lot of those things into one big nasty stew. I mean, I've been in the Army since 98. I'm still in the reserves, and I think that a lot of people will agree the Army is one of the biggest bureaucracies we've ever seen. The Army doesn't have the ability to respond and adapt in the same way our individual soldiers and Marines do on the ground, and that's part of the problem here. It's the reason why we haven't been able to have Humvees that are adequate. It's why our equipment hasn't evolved at the speed it should. Our procurement bureaucracy on the back end in Washington just moves too slow. So we need to knock the cobwebs off this thing and get it moving so our people can get exactly what they need.
And isn't it unrealistic for us to expect a general to say to the higher-ups in a war that's unpopular that, oh, by the way, we're not treating those who are returning from this war wounded and maimed properly? Part of me thinks that's unrealistic, and that's a general who's going to be looking for retirement.
I hope not, because, you know, we're depending on those generals to do the right thing and to take care of their troops, and I think most of them do. But if they don't, they need to be fired.
Yeah.
Get them out of there, and you know, this is a chance for Secretary Gates to show some level of accountability, fire some people, bring somebody new in, and make sure that this is remedied. I mean, I have a friend who lost his right arm, both legs shattered in a grenade attack. He was out processing from Walter Reed in the wintertime and was carrying his paperwork from building to building for hours in the snow. Okay, this shouldn't happen. There should be a paperwork pusher to help guide him through the process to make sure his claim gets adjusted and moved through, and that he can get out of there and go back to his home community. These bureaucratic nightmares are really, really just unacceptable at any level.
How are conditions at other military and veterans hospitals across the country? Walter Reed can't be alone in this.
Well, I think we're going to find out. I think that's a good question. And our folks have been aggressively moving out into the communities to try to find out if there are other cases like this. And if veterans are listening and know about cases like this, please let us know at IAVA.org. Contact our organization, and we'll hook you in. Maybe this will, you know, that's the silver lining here. Maybe this will bring greater sunshine onto those other places and a higher level of accountability. But I got to tell you, this is, again, at the crown jewel in the backyard of the Capitol. Imagine what it's going to be like in the VAs and the local communities in the coming years, because the money's not there. And unfortunately, I think you're going to see more stories like this down the line.
Here's the most ironic thing, Paul. Last week was Salute to Hospitalized Veterans Week. It's obvious that a salute is not enough.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time, as always.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate it.
Paul Rykov, Director of the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. You can find him online at IAVA.org. He also has written about his own experiences in a book called Chasing Ghosts, and we call on him for his expertise on a regular basis here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.